Like countless artists before him, he stands in the lush countryside of Tuscany, savoring the light and the land and their embrace. A canvas is ready on his easel, and he's already studied the shadows, the shadings, the shapes of the clouds, and contours of the hills and townscape, too. There's an extra step this time, though, and that's sharing his engagement with this place with us. We're journeying to Tuscany with Ryan Keeler, and also traveling along the path of his creative process in composing a landscape painting, begun en plein air, outdoors in Tuscany, and completed stateside in his studio in Wyalusing, his hometown. And it's so much about the clouds. Keeler says, I love doing clouds. They're a great way to organize and be kind of an abstract design element. He works with a fast-drying white paint that allows him to build up the layers quickly, filling the sky so fully. And all the while, there seems to be some music playing in the background there in his studio. A bit of jazz, not this piece, but it could very well be a theme song for Brian Keeler as he's working on this skyscape. It's a piece titled Nuage, the French word for clouds, and it's by the celebrated French guitarist Django Reinhardt, known for a style sometimes called gypsy jazz. As it happens, Brian Keeler is not just an artist, but he's a jazz guitarist who goes each summer to Gypsy Jazz Camp in Massachusetts to share his love of the style with others from around the world, and he's a longtime swing dancer. And somehow, the sense of rhythm, line, tone, tempo, and color in all these disciplines comes together in whatever he's doing. He began his art studies at Keystone College in La Plume, and he went on to the York Academy of Fine Arts, where he developed his talents for drawing and painting. He taught for many years, and he takes students to Tuscany to luxuriate in the light, to learn their art as generations before them have done, by learning to look, learning to see en plein air and in museums, churches, and other sites where the greats of the Western tradition have practiced. Brian Keeler has reached a maturity in his own work, and there is a significant one-person exhibition of a range of his pieces at the Roberson Museum and Science Center in Binghamton, now through January 7th. The show is titled Heliodelic Topography, and it will be complemented by a show of his work at the gallery at SUNY Broome from July into August, titled The Light as Muse, The Muse as Light. He'll be offering a workshop in connection with the Broome exhibition as well. And his riverscapes are featured in a group show at the Sordoni Art Gallery at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre through August 13th. The show is titled Upstream and Down, the Susquehanna. Brian Keeler stopped in at the WVIA studios recently before a jazz gig in Scranton to talk with us about his work and the big exhibit in Binghamton.
It's not exactly a retrospective because it doesn't really encompass everything. I guess a retrospective is more encompassing. But I think of the exhibit sort of as a summation because it's in a museum and it's a big show. It goes through three galleries. It starts downstairs and then there's a sort of ante room upstairs. Then there's the main gallery, which is a huge room. Then they put partitions up. And it's excellently curated by Peter Klosky. He's the curator at the Roberson Museum. And just listening to him, he said, this is my job. You know, I'm trying to coordinate how things go together and see how things pull you across the room and relate. So it was a real honor to have somebody fine-tune it and put that much attention in it. But the exhibit is, like I said, a summation of a career because some of the work will go back maybe 20, 25 years. But a lot of it is recent. There's, I'd say, maybe two-thirds of it is in the past year or two. And a lot of it's just coming up from Philadelphia. This spring I had a show at the Roger LaPell Gallery in Philadelphia. And when that ended, I brought up quite a bit just directly from that to the Binghamton show.
And there's a nice footnote in that you and your father have ties.
Right, to the Roberson. I have a photo in the essay of me sketching my mother in 1973. They had outdoor shows that they've done there for years. I'm not sure if they're still doing them. And then my father exhibited there in the 50s and 60s. So there's a nice family tradition there at this museum.
Sometimes we talk about the work and then we back into the title, but the title is so intriguing. We want to start there.
Yeah, the title is Heliodelic Topography, and I've been doing these shows my whole life, so I'm always kind of thinking, you know, what would have an interesting, catchy name? And the previous show, I had one that I liked a lot because I've been reading James Joyce's Ulysses, and he has this famous phrase. Anybody that knows James Joyce, just say it's ineluctable. And the title of the show is The Ineluctable Modality of the Visible. It's like, what does that mean? And I don't think anybody uses ineluctable too much, but it basically means inevitable. And coupled with the other parts of the exhibit, the ineluctable visibility, it's sort of implied to me is the way that painting is compelling to me. It's sort of inevitable, just as a natural compelling force that draws me toward it. So this heliodelic one, I came across a review of a woman's work. It was in this online journal called the Jewish Studio School. It's also in Italy. And they were interviewing this woman. And she had this interesting term. It wasn't heliodelic. It was phototropic. It was the word. And it's sort of I think it's a biological term, which she appropriated for a visual term. It's like a plant that naturally turns toward the light, like photosynthesis. And then I started thinking, and then I came across heliotrope, which I think is another word for a sunflower. And in Italy, the name for a sunflower is girasole, which means to turn toward the sun, girasole, to turn toward the sun, and that's what sunflowers do. So then heliodelic, to me, it's not exactly a coined word, but I certainly appropriated it for my own purposes. And I think of it as taking delectation or delight in the sunlight and topography, and whether it's a still life or a figure or a portrait, it's about topography. Another interesting word is physiognomy, and it's the character that's built into the facial structure or the topography. So that's kind of the background with this term heliodelic.
And you've got writing in your family from generations of these newspaper folks, so you've got words there too.
Yeah.
If anyone knows your work, it's not just the light, but we are certainly struck by your sensitivity and your power to evoke light on a two-dimensional surface.
Well, thank you. Yes, I think that's probably what I'm known for, is a lot of people connect me with a type of a palette and the color that I use, and I've always kind of done that. I had a teacher at school, Virgil Sove, and he said the most powerful tool in your toolbox is color, and it really struck me. And like a lot of students in high school, and I think at Keystone, I was mostly drawing. But once I got exposed to color, I just like took it and ran with it. And there's this quote from this book. I may have mentioned this before, but it's by Johannes Itten. And he said something to the effect of, it's our charge as artists to release the spiritual essence imprisoned in form. I said, wow, that's great. I like that. It was sort of like a manifesto or a charge, what to do as a purpose in painting.
And you've been affected in your own personal education, just loving art and loving artists. You've been drawn to artists over the centuries who have experimented and found their own ways of working with sun and light in general.
Yes, yes. That's one of the joys about going to Europe and even to the museums here in the United States. But, for example, last year I went to the Louvre on the way to Italy, and it was just such a treat to be there and just to see these amazing paintings. And some of the painters of light, John Singer Sargent's always been one. They had a show of his watercolors at the Boston Museum maybe a couple years ago. It was just incredible the way he portrays light with watercolor and his oils too. They're so spontaneous and fresh and immediate, and he incorporates that same bravura. And there's another word in Italian, it's called sprezzatura, and it means ease and naturalness of doing something. So it's a great word that sort of encompasses the Zen idea of doing something with a minimal amount of restrictions or something, but with great facility and skill. So you see these painters like Boldini is an Italian one, and Anders Zorn is another painter. And then, of course, Joaquin Sorolla, the Spanish painter. They're all sort of in that same tradition of painting very gesturally and direct. And that was another place that we stopped, I think, on the way back from Italy, as we stopped in Madrid to go to the Prado, but also to go to the Sorolla Museum. It's in his house, and it's just incredible. And he's just like Sargent on steroids or something. And a lot of them painted on the spot there. There's this photograph of Sorolla. There's a famous painting, I think it's in the Musée d'Orsay, of these bulls pulling a boat in on the ocean. And then a teacher said, yeah, I saw this photograph of him with this big canvas on the beach and painting this thing with the actual cattle there, too. So it was amazing.
And you do that. You go out and you're in a canoe or a kayak,
yeah,
aren't you, with your canvases, sometimes in the river.
In the river and all through Italy. I paint in the tradition of the Impressionist painters. And Corot was the early trailblazer that I've followed in Italy as he went through these various places. And I got this book and I had the places mapped out where he went. So I went to followed some of these, and one of them was Ponte Augusto. It's near the town of Todi, and this ancient Roman bridge is still there, so you can still go there to paint the same place that Corot did.
Sort of like a pilgrimage.
Yeah, it is like a pilgrimage, so it's great to connect. And I mentioned in the catalog essay about these sort of same spot occurrences where I've been painting, sometimes by purpose going to Corot's, but other times I'll just find myself. One of the most moving ones was in Sicily. I had this painting on my computer, which was in the Legion of Honor in San Francisco, and it was this wonderful painting of a Roman ruin. I said, wow, that looks incredible in the sea. And then we stopped in Terramina, and they have this ancient Greek amphitheater. I said, this is it. I'm here. And so I just sat there and painted.
So it can be serendipity in that way.
Yeah. So that's always incredible when that kind of thing happens.
If we think about sunlight and being attracted to the sun, we might think of bright, sunny days. But you take us through the cycle, and it's not just summer when everything's bright, but you take us to winter, fall, spring, and different times of day, nighttime as well.
Yeah, the title of the show kind of encompassed sort of the main, pardon the pun, but the leitmotif of the exhibit. But there's certainly other types. You know, I do nocturnes and city scenes and, you know, cloudy days too. But it's sort of, in a way, it's still about the light, whether it's a bright sunny day. And the time of day that I often enjoy painting is called the golden hour. I think it's a film term that kind of brings out the drama. Like if you think of Edward Hopper's paintings, look like they're usually done that time of day with these striking, raking light and late afternoon shadows. And another painter is Di Chirico, the surrealist painter, who have these dramatic shadows and contrast of light and dark. The chiaroscuro, isn't it? Just like your record label here, the chiaroscuro.
And you write so well in your essay about Rembrandt.
Rembrandt and Vermeer and those other 17th century Dutch masters, they had a way of orchestrating their light, so the light kind of would focus on the main actor. But then they'd have like people or figures sort of obscured within the shadows. And that's what this writer was talking about, that she liked to have her figures somehow in the shadow because it slowed down the process. Whereas, you know, like Rembrandt would often put the main actor right in the light of a window or something. But then he'd also put figures in the background in the shadows, kind of mysterious. So the viewer would spend more time, you know, you have to like really look and see, oh, what's going on in the shadow? And so it kind of slows the process down a little bit. But you still have that focus and that orchestration of the main figure, like in Rembrandt's allegories or historical or biblical paintings, of the main figures sort of being focused in the light.
You just used the word window, and there are literal windows and metaphorical windows. But again, that's another play of words and image and way of thinking about painting.
Yeah, I have two still lives in the show, and they were both done in Italy last year. from our hotel windows. One was in a little town called Poppi. It's in northern Tuscany, north of Arezzo. And it happened to be one of the places that Dante went when he was exiled from Florence. I'd been there several other times and I saw the statue of Dante, but for some reason I didn't know that his connection was there. But in regards to the window idea, one of them was done there and one of them was done at another place near Siena. But this theorist, Alberti, Leon Battista Alberti, he was an early Renaissance theorist who was highly influential to all the painters, like Botticelli's Birth of Venus and Primavera. Everything was taken almost verbatim from his book. It's like, this is what you have to paint. And Botticelli read it, and he painted it. So he was really a Renaissance man before Leonardo, and he was an architect and a theorist and a painter. But he conceived of this idea of a painting. Before that, paintings had been rather flat, like in the Byzantine period. It was just icons, religious icons, without any depiction of depth. And then he conceived of the idea of a painting as being a window into space, which you look into, which later time in the 20th century, I'm not sure if it was Picasso, but other people railed against it, said, I don't want my paintings to be a window anymore. I want them to be flat. But for me, I like this idea of a window. So I've done these two still lifes that have windows in them, sort of as an homage to Alberti.
And you also have some mythological themes as well.
Right. Yeah, that's part of the fun, the interest of going to Italy and seeing how much all the painters, or many of the painters like Botticelli or Caravaggio, and they've all done sort of interpretations of ancient Greco-Roman themes. And I have several in the show, but two that are in the catalog. One of them is called Icarus and Daedalus, and it's the story of Icarus and his father, Daedalus, putting wings on them and flying too close to the sun. So I've taken that theme and put it in like a Victorian Americana setting, and it's at night. And somebody said, well, I thought they went in the sun. And I said, well, this is the night before. They're testing out their wings. So they're kind of open-ended. And then another one, it's in the catalog. It's a redoing of Botticelli's Primavera. And I put myself in the guise of the god Zephyr. And I had these two models pose as Flora and Chloris. And it's like one section of the long painting of Primavera. So I have fun with these themes and just try to update these ancient Greco-Roman themes.
Your sense of architecture, your sense of the Victorian house, for example, or buildings, or just the way the trees are in the landscape. Your paintings are beautifully composed.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I think about that a lot. And when I sketch, well, I sometimes do detail, but they're primarily like little abstract studies to determine the intervals and the placement of things. And I love the late Wuchsberger artist, Franz Klein, and his big sort of like Zen paintings. So I sort of think, you know, even though all my paintings are basically realistic, they start off rather emotional and just sort of structural. And that's what I try to get my students to think about, is these very simplified major divisions. Like, I put two lines down, like one for the major vertical, one for the horizontal. And there's this idea in painting of thinking each stage is a masterpiece. Like, you work for 30 seconds and say, could I step away from this? And would it have a sense of completion to it? So it's a great thing in painting to always step back from your work. So you work like 10 minutes and step back and see if it, you know, has a sense of wholeness or completion to it.
Sometimes we use words like beautiful. There's beauty, and there's ways of talking about that. But there is also that sense of, oh, the Frederick Churches and the Hudson River School, and the sense of the sublime. And some of your sunrises, sunsets, there's sublime there, isn't there?
Well, thank you. Well, I certainly aspired to that. And I guess sunsets have taken a bad rap over the years. It's like, I think it's because it's something that everybody's attracted to. We love the beauty. That's part of the idea of the Ashcan school, or the non-picturesque, which was one of my early influences at art school, was just finding beauty in the very commonplace, which has a relevance and importance for young students to see, you know, just look at your everyday life to see, you know, you don't have to go for the dramatic. But then at the same time, it's not necessarily off limits or gauche to paint a sunset or a sunrise.
As someone who has been trained at the York Academy, how do you think about concepts like beauty and the sublime in art?
I think it has to do with, there's something that I mentioned in the essay too. It came from Dante, and a certain stage, Dante the Pilgrim, his lesson or what he learns is wisdom has to do with the proper correlation of the parts to the whole. So I think that's part of it there. And I sort of think of it like an aspiration, you know, something to go towards, is to have this proper blending or connectedness of the whole to the parts. And so it's not just like a detail. You don't just do a detail, but you see how it relates to the whole thing. And in the Inferno, they talk about it in relation to arts, but also in relation to the cosmos. Like, he's talking about the tilt of the Earth being at 23 degrees. And if it was just one more degree this way or that way, our whole seasons would be off of kilter. And so this delicate balance of the universe, and so it applies to social things and cosmic things and artistic things.
What do you hope are some of the things that might possibly be important about going to see a show like yours or going to museums in the 21st century now?
I think it could be just the appreciation of what we have, like the Victorian architecture that we have here. A lot of it is being destroyed. Even in my hometown, I'm trying to keep these buildings, but somehow they are not valued enough, and so that might be part of it. And just also taking care of the land, and that's been a major issue in my part of Pennsylvania with the influx of the gas industry. It's been a very divisive issue, and it's for me, for a landscape painter, to see this whole huge industry just come in, and that's just from a sort of an aesthetic or an annoyance point of view, not to mention the environmental aspects of it. So these things that seem like art for art's sake with painting, they can have wider correlations to contemporary events and environmental things as well.
You are so rooted in the tradition, and you know the tradition so well, but you've made it your own, and it's very much Brian Keeler painting today.
Yeah. People have said that to me, and it's not something that I've actually set out to do. Like, I've known artists that's set out to make a style, which is a good, a commendable thing. But for me, it was just, I just went and painted, and a style that people sort of recognize for me just sort of came by itself. It wasn't like I found a style and just decided to go for that. I mean, there's types of painting that I liked, but I'm not so much of a stylist, but I have a style.
But the variety, you're working in still life, you're working in portraits. Talk to us a little bit about how portrait fits in.
Well, it was my earliest involvement in painting. When I was in high school, I started drawing portraits from photographs. And then in art school, between semesters, I went to the boardwalk in Wildwood and drew them from life, and that was a new experience, and it was rather terrifying at first because, you know, there was a lot of people around and people were watching. But by the end of that summer, we were really, flowing with it, and it was a great experience just to do that many. And since then, you know, I've continued with portraits. I did a lot for the Lackawanna County Courthouse, many of the judges there, and in Wilkes-Barre, I did a portrait of Judge Rosen. Years ago, I think I did a couple of him and other judges. So I've done these sort of official type of portraits, and so that's part of it. And there's a couple of portraits in the show that I've done for my own enjoyment of friends. And I have a YouTube site, and there's a couple of them you can actually see me painting. And there's a number of the paintings in the show, maybe 10 or 12, that actually have documentation, and it's free. I have these like short 5 to 10 minute clips of me painting them. A lot of them actually on location in Italy, others around Finger Lakes and in Maine, so you can see me painting on the spot, and then I bring them back in the studio and do another short clip to show you how they are brought to resolution.
You were talking about gesture and gestural painting. You're a dancer, so that's not separate, is it?
I guess not. Yeah, there's certainly correlations, and I think about that when I instruct figure painting. There's correlations explaining about the model's weight, and it's the same in dancing. Like in tango, you have to always know where your weight is and where your follower's weight is. So when we're doing figure drawings, you always have to determine how the model is weighted. Is she on one foot, or is he on both feet at the same time? And so that's just an interesting correlation between dance and painting.
We can see the show. It's up for a while.
Yeah, it's going to have a long run. It goes until January 7th, so there's a long run there. And then I'm also teaching a workshop in Binghamton at SUNY Broome. That's Broome Community College. And that will be July 10th through the 15th.
And what will the focus be?
It will be both figure painting and landscape. So we'll do figure painting in the morning and go outside, weather permitting, and paint the cityscape of Binghamton along the Susquehanna and Shenango. And so it's a nice combination. It's the same thing that I do in Italy, but I'm doing it here in Binghamton.
Is there anything that you'd like us to know about something that's in the show that you'd particularly like us to pay attention to?
I particularly like my last two ones. I just did a plein air of Binghamton from this bridge. It's a pedestrian bridge, and it actually has the museum kind of in the background. It's at the confluence of the Susquehanna and Shenango River, and it was a famous historical point where I guess it was Clinton camped there before Binghamton was even a city. And then the one that's on the card cover is called Seneca August Clouds, and it seems to be getting a lot of response, and it's going to be on the cover of the Ithaca Times summer edition, so it will be out for the whole summer. So if you live around Ithaca or New York State, you'll see it on the Ithaca Times.
Award-winning artist Brian Keeler, a native of Wyalusing here in Bradford County, speaking with us in connection with two exhibitions and a painting workshop in Binghamton, New York, and he has work in Wilkes-Barre as well. At the Roberson Museum and Science Center, his paintings are featured in a one-person show in the Sears Harkness Gallery through January 7th, titled Heliodelic Topography. And then SUNY Broome will feature from July 10th to August 31st a show titled The Light as Muse, The Muse as Light. And Keeler will be teaching a workshop in connection with that show. And as we heard, you'll have a chance to have work in the morning and outside work in the afternoon. The workshop will also include slide presentations on the Italian Renaissance and various aspects of painting. The first, Sunday, July 10th at 7 in the evening, and the workshop will run through July 15th, and that's at SUNY Broome. And also, he has work in the Sordoni Art Gallery show, and that one will run until August 13th at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre. The show is titled Upstream and Down the Susquehanna. It's a group show at the Sordoni Art Gallery in Wilkes-Barre, and that's through August 13th. If you'd like more information about Brian Keeler, to see those video clips of the work, and also to learn more about his career, briankeeler.com, Brian K-E-E-L-E-R, briankeeler.com. He has authored an art instruction book titled Dramatic Color in the Landscape, published by Northlight Books. He's produced several full-length instructional DVDs on various aspects of painting, and you can see those clips of the creative process on his website. His paintings have been represented for many years at the Laura Craig Galleries in Scranton, the West End Gallery in Corning, New York, and the Roger LaPelle Gallery in Philadelphia. For more information on the web, briankeeler.com, briankeeler.com.